Understand.
I see you with your Yoji Yamamoto hat.
Yeah, a little something,
The one of three.
This old thing.
Yeah, the one of three maids, period. There was one red one, one yellow one, one black one.
Exactly.
So this old rag I got, oh, I remember I had this so
This
long.
nigga. That's alpaca, nigga. This is alpaca.
You don't know about this shit. This is the freshest cotton. Pop Life Podcast today is May 24th. I wasn't gonna get that. I was gonna say 30 something. So
because it's Memorial Day.
Yeah, I'm up to today for like Saturday. To me,
this time of year is the Matrix because the children are out. They're out in the all times hours of the day. I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought today was Thursday for a good bit. So I was like, thank God Ivy's going to school tomorrow. And Trav was like, no.
I'm noticing on social media this year, I don't know if I missed this, wasn't paying attention before, but I'm noticing a lot of memes and stuff about the teachers being out and how like they got all this stuff about them being out and being happy. I don't remember to this level in previous years. Maybe I missed it. I could have just missed it, you know?
These children are a lot. It's a lot.
They're
right
a lot.
Now.
But also, I don't know if you missed it. I know that there have been like little jokes about teachers being out, but I think this is the first year that everybody's all the way back to norm post pandemic, like all the way back.
Mm-hmm.
But like the kids ain't. You know what I'm saying? Like, there have been a lot of like exceptions and stretching of rules, and also like, even for me with higher ed, these are kids who were in high school during the pandemic. Like the adjustments I have to make, you know, just to remember where they were. So I think that this is the first year that teachers are like trying to go back to like whatever their pre-pandemic routine was, but them kids ain't there.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting. You know what I'm saying? Like
I was telling another mom, like every morning getting ready for school is like a brand new activity. Like we've never done this before. And I'm looking at her like...
Like there's no routine here. Like, what do you mean? Yeah,
you
like,
brushed your teeth 700 times since we moved here. Like, why?
Why
we're gonna brush them again today, my nigga. Yeah. Like, it's happening.
Why are you surprised? Why is this shocking?
Also, a friend of mine. She's a teacher, and she was telling me about. And I'm sure you two probably know about this. What's the word I'm looking for? The phenomena, for lack of a better term, that's not the word, but of the COVID kids.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. These COVID kids, their brains are different. So, like, the older ones, that gap, like, the younger ones seem to be, like, little supervillains. The older ones, it's like this gap in socialization and in-person learning.
Yeah, really threw them off.
It's taxing the shit out of them and the people teaching them because we don't yet have concrete studies to point to where the gaps are, right?
They're kind of
feeling your way through.
Mm-hmm.
And also, at the same time, like the COVID learning created just more gaps, period, in the level of rigor in their learning. So I got kids in college that don't fucking read long form content. You know what I'm saying? Like it's just it's a lot to try to adjust. I had to adjust my syllabus so many times once I was kind of getting a feel for my first years, especially. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and I think also like for us, for adults, COVID was like yesterday. And for them, it was 100 years ago, but it was also like 100 years long.
Right.
You know what I mean?
There's also a different, like, weirder kind of socialization that happened, or lack thereof, with COVID babies. So, like, Ivy was born in 17. She would have entered preschool in, like, 20.
Right.
And we didn't, obviously.
Right.
So.
It's 2 years, yeah.
So what you get is either kids who don't want to be around other kids. Or kids that are bleeding heart, compassion. We can't leave anybody behind.
Right.
You know, everybody hold my hands. It's
and
one or the other.
Also, some of the kids, weirdly, and I know everybody has seen the joke about COVID babies. Some of the toddlers seem very advanced. Or whatever. Whether that's because they got so much one-on-one time with parents in the house, doing shit, whatever, or whatever have you. But like them teenagers, woo,
like a lot of kids in Ivy's kindergarten class can read, but like they send notes home like, please have your kids practice keeping their shoes on all day.
Right. Because they've been home. Like
they've been home with us.
They don't know class etiquette.
They want to walk around.
Yeah, they don't have no coof.
Yeah. Speaking of, y'all just sparked something, so y'all know y'all was goofing on me about my little hat, you know what I mean? But I'm also noticing there's a lot of the plethora. I'm kind of like...
Not a plethora.
Yeah, plethora, like that was a good word, right? I'm kind of hating in a way, but then I'm kind of like, in other way, on there's a plethora now of like fashion kids, right? And these fashion blogs and these flat fashion TikToks. Now, I'm kind of like hating in a way because when I was coming up and I was putting that shit on the regular,
I have a lot of peers.
It's like wearing jeans and t-shirts.
That's the thing. It's the access. Anybody can get shit now. In your day, though, nobody.
Part of it was
to know somebody.
You had to know to go get this type of yogi hat. You know what I mean? So I'm a little hating because that wasn't around in my day. You know, I had to seek it out. Fine. Yeah. But then it irks me because a lot of these niggas don't really know. They don't know the fashion. They just putting shit on.
That's in a lot of things.
Not just fashion. But I'm noticing in fashion, like they just putting shit on. Whereas again, you know, I always say I'm gonna sound like the old nigga on the show. But in my day, you know, I had to like find the Japanese magazine. I had to go downtown and like know the spot where they have the different magazines. And then I was studied that shit for real. Like I really know.
Are you mad at the internet? He's just mad
that he didn't get a minute. He mad. Let me tell you why Jeffrey's mad. Jeffrey's mad because in another life, on a different timeline, he could have been like an internet star with the rare shit.
Maybe that, but I just want these niggas to study it. Like, if you're going to do it.
But they don't care. That's the thing.
I know. That's the problem.
This is where we get in conflict. They don't care that much. They just want to do how it feels. I'll tell you who be putting that shit on, though. That kid Wisdom. That nigga's like a superhero.
You gotta know him.
I didn't see him.
He's on the gram?
He's on the gram and he's on TikTok. He's bigger on TikTok.
He's the one that's like
a real tall kid.
He's dope.
His Met Gala outfit was like incredible too, and it stuck with the red.
But see, he studies it.
He studies. Yeah,
exactly. That's what I'm just saying. Like
structure, the whole shit.
He's fire. And there's some other cats that follow too. I'm gonna say, do a little research on your shit. This will be like I'm gonna put it on with everybody else got on.
Sean, I saw you kind of comment on something like this because there's that guy who talks about sartorial stuff and the suits and the cuts and
There's a I think that there's a fine line, particularly in that space in wardrobe, where you can come off very snobby.
Mm-hmm.
And I never want to come off very snobby, but I'm still learning. And like that's a part of this sort of like following those folks and kind of taking a look and then maybe reexamining some of the things that you put together, like one of the lost arts that I'm seeing now are, you know, men just don't dress for their body type.
Right.
Right? Like they don't really have a concept of a
pants, you can see every single thing in the pocket.
So for me, like I always go back to this, but I remember going to the tailor and I was like, oh, this is an amazing fabric. And I wanted, you know, something made. And he was like, just the jacket, right? And I was thinking, like, the suit. He was like, nah, you can't. and I appreciate it, and I fuck with that. Because that's the kind of guy that's needed.
That's a real tale.
He knows his shit, right? Like, he knows, he will tell you, nah, that you don't want to look in that book. Yeah. This ain't gonna break right. I like, I'm a fairly wide person, right? Right. So I have to be very conscious of patterns and what that looks like as a wide person.
Right.
So yeah, I know y'all have noticed. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. No. Go ahead.
This black wife trend on TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
Where the white dudes are doing, like, before I had a black wife, I looked like, you know. And then afterwards.
Country singer.
He was like a country singer who doesn't have a deal yet. And then after, I got the, you know, taper on the sides, my clothes fit a little better.
Yeah.
I look like I wash now. And that just made me think of that. Cause I'm like, you could also just go to a good barbershop and like date who you want and get a good tan.
Yeah. You don't have to have a black wife for the glow up.
Yeah.
But I will also say, I think, so the dressing for the body type thing, I've noticed, and maybe it's a conflation, I don't know. I blame fast fashion for this because people are skipping things like lining.
Absolutely.
And, you know, undershirts and things that were meant to actually help your silhouette, right? And that's for men and women, right? Like, so for example, you know, I'm a little thick, I'm on the bottom. Lined pants were always hard for me because they never had stretch. You know what I'm saying? So if I got something with stretch, though, it had to be a certain weight material still just to make sure that everything was smooth and all of that. And I noticed, like, as happy as I am to see women not super paranoid and trying to suck, hold, whatever, everything in, I see so many looks where I'm like, first of all, the dress will look more expensive, right, if you just had a different undergarment. And I don't say it to be an old lady, but there's something about the structure of things that people
I know she ain't out here with no camisole top on.
Without a slip. Where your slip be? And like, not nothing. I hate wearing slips.
Where your slip?
But the other thing is, like, I also hate Spanx. I don't think Spanx actually makes things any better for me, but a slip, it's the smoothing. A slip can. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it makes the fabric not catch on your body as your body moves.
It's just about movement, structure, bras that fit. You know what I'm saying? Like, little shit. And these dudes who be buying these suits and, like, you can barely button it, and I can see, and then you shove mad shit in your pocket. I can see your pocket is bulging. Your pocket is not supposed to stick out. You know what I'm saying? Like, your pocket is supposed to lay flat across against your clothes on the line of the clothes. And then your suit buttons be about to fucking pop open.
Like, I don't know
who told you that look fly.
Because a lot of these guys, again, are going through fast fashion to get their ideas, and they're going through Instagram to get their ideas.
And they're getting ideas from the wrong fits, from ill fits.
Yes, exactly. So you're looking at a guy who is, you know, a fucking 38 regular. Okay, and his suit looks amazing, except nigga, you are a 62 short,
right?
And that is not the same suit, my guy. It's just not.
It's crazy. We're
talking about all time. So to that point, I just came back from a summit, and the dude who styled Steve Harvey and Marjorie Harvey, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he sat on a panel about luxury. And I had to go up to him. First of all, the suit he wore was fucking phenomenal. Like, that cut,
he's fly. I don't remember his name.
It was slightly bell-bottom. It was orange. That shit just was swinging. It was fucking gorgeous. But I came up to him afterwards, and I was like, you changed Steve Harvey's life because we was tired of the buttons. Thank you. You did everybody a service. But I'm just like, that, like, the fits. You know what I'm saying? The cut. And I think, to your point, Sean, like, Sean, you are so good at dressing for your size. Like, I know you're a big and tall shopping dude, but you don't give big and tall. Like, I'm not saying that. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying
you
that.
You be having that shit on.
Like, you be having some shit on. You know what I'm saying? And I know that that's something that you've had to learn to do over time.
Oh yeah. There's a few missteps, and more importantly, what you do is, you know, again, you got to get your staples. You got to, particularly for dressing up, And that, when I say dressing up, I mean putting on a suit. I'm also, that was also a part of my youth.
Yeah, right. Church.
Going church. To church, right? My mom's had me in that shit, right? Like, I there's several pictures of me looking like George Jefferson, nigga. Three
my mom had us in the slits.
Black top. All that shit, like my dad was very particular about, like, I needed to learn how to tie a real tie. I didn't have clip-ons after a certain age.
Yeah.
Cufflinks, all of those sorts of things. My dad was, my dad didn't have no in-between clothes. He had church clothes and work clothes.
And that was
there
it.
Was no,
right.
That nigga had no get fresh clothes.
right. It wasn't no going out, it was outside clothes. Yeah.
Now, when he went to church, he was clean.
Mm.
And when he went to work, and he worked in the factory, so it was jeans and work boots. And shit, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I have tons of pictures of my uncle. So I've always kind of been sort of enamored with what that looks like. And I follow a ton of people online, and I get ideas. Oh, this might look good. Oh, that might look good. Maybe I can try that. And also, I'll take a chance on something that's maybe not super expensive. So like, right. If I want to try something, like, let me just kind of see, let me do a little heat check, and then okay, I kind of like that, and then I can kind of go now level. Exactly. And there's different levels of different shit as you grow. A lot of those guys shop in very consumer friendly price points.
Yeah.
And again, you can do that. It is perfectly fine, but you should always budget in, and this is the last thing I'll say, you should always budget in about $50 to $75 on whatever you're buying to go get it tapered.
It makes such a difference. You can just take it to the rack.
Yeah. The rack is
a world of difference.
Even for women, like getting something taken in
shit, like waist, a swimsuit. Oh my
getting
God.
Getting something taken in at the waist, taking a couple of inches off the bottom, just to make, like, again, not even super expensive, but it makes a world of difference. I think that people just haven't, and not to get on a whole thing about this, but I share this concern. I feel like we haven't really taught folks to know. I feel like people don't realize, like, you have certain things that you know will always work for you, right? Everything ain't for everybody. You can, and yes, you might want to experiment a little bit, but you got to kind of find a space, like almost like a signature, like, you know, that's your thing. You know, you can throw that on and not think about it, and it's always going to work. Like, I can,
yeah, I'm like the outfit formula. I'm a wide leg pant, slim top girl. Every time it's going to hit.
I can pull certain stuff off the rack, certain skirts, certain dresses, certain pants. I can look at them immediately and say, does it, like, pleats are back? Mm-hmm. Absolutely fucking not. I can't wear a pleated pant. It's going to make me
that look works for me. See, that my waist is not as small.
It's going to make me look, well, first of all, my waist is very high, but I have like a lot of hips and thighs. Pleats are not going to work. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you just have to know the things that work and know where to invest and where, like, summertime, go cheap.
Yeah.
Knock yourself out.
Yeah.
The Zara's, the H&M's, the whatever's. But that's the other thing. We got these Shein situations. And everything's
fast fashion.
Everything's like $50.
The last thing I'll say is for Jeff and why he feels that way is, I think that for your particular generation, age-wise and location, like where you spent that time was very heavy into fashion in a far more technical sense than they were in a name brand sense, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? So it wasn't just that it was fly. It was like, yeah, you know, it was a name, but you may not have even known, but when you saw so-and-so wear it, or I'm wearing this because this is in season, or this is what
it was also like, yo, where'd you get that?
Exactly.
We don't have that anymore.
Me and we was cool anyway, because he's very close to an ex of mine. But one of the ways me and Chris Chambers, who's a huge publicist, worldwide known, bonded is I would bump into that nigga in Barney's. That's how we bonded. We always see each other. Right. Hey, Oh, then we start talking. Yo, oh, those are the new products. You been like that was it was a thing to go to again. I'm the old nigga, but it was a thing to like go to Barney's on a Saturday and see them.
I was.
Are
I
you in there? Like, you know what I'm saying? Okay.
I will never forget being 12 years old and being with my older cousin. Maybe I was 11, and they went to Barney's because they were going to the Tyson fight that night. Wow. The Tyson Spinks fight.
Had to get fresh. They had to get fresh for real.
Them, first of all, I'd never seen that much cash at that point in my life ever. Niggas bought everything cash. Yeah, and yeah. Like, I was like fascinated. I had never seen, like, I was the alligator shoes and the fucking yep. coats. And the I was like, oh my God. I was like, yep. This ain't ANS, nigga. Like, what the?
this is another level.
It's another level.
It's another level. So, yeah, it used to be a store in New York, Ben Clothes. Called Dollar Bills. They were in Grand Central Station, and they had a lot of the hard to get shit at that time. Italy, a lot of shit. And I seen a dude come in there with, like you showing with, I don't even know who this dude was, black dude. I didn't know how much cash this was, but this nigga put down like so much cash on the counter and was just like, and just went around the store just grabbing. I was like, this nigga's amazing. Yeah, those are the days, man. Those are the days. I want to mention this. New York City has a new club called, I see people calling it Garcons. I think it's called
Garcons.
Yeah,
it's called Garcons.
Like, you uncultured niggas.
If you calling it that, you definitely can't get it that much.
You niggas call it Garcons. I've seen a few.
In fairness, I did see it typed out without the accent.
That's a little thing on the top.
But anywho, go ahead.
But they are requiring you to show that you have at a minimum $50,000 in your bank account to gain entry into the club.
For men.
For men. Well, I think women are free.
Yes.
Women are free, and you got to
have. I love it. More of
and
that.
I actually think, upon reflection, for New York City, now this wouldn't work in like Denver, right? But in New York City, this actually is a great idea.
This is a fucking awful idea.
I don't know if it's going to work now.
Let me tell you why it's a great idea. In my opinion, why it's a great idea.
For, it would have been a great idea in 2003.
Maybe, because you got all the trust fund kids. You got all the hedge fund boys. It's going to be that. It's going to be Wolf of Wall Street in there with a few other cats thrown in because, you know, the street cats don't have no really bank accounts to prove they got 50,000. They have 50,000, but not on paper. But I'm assuming the crowd they want to get is the trust fund kids, the hedge fund kids, the kids that went to the private schools, and what was the TV show? With the young rich kids. The TV
Which
show.
One of the young kids?
The young rich white kids. What the hell's the name of the show?
Gossip Girl.
Yes, they want that. They want that crowd. I believe
that's the trust fund kids.
Yeah, but
first of all, that's a word of mouth crowd. That is not a we finna put it on in the New Yorker crowd.
Yeah,
but it's a fucking terrible idea because I would never give my fucking bank account to a nigga running the club. You niggas are absolute fucking fools if you think. I'm going to give you actual information like that because, my God, if there's a data breach, and there will likely be a data breach.
There will be a data breach.
And on top of that, we are living in the scammiest of scammest times, nigga. I can make a paper say I got $10 million in my bank account right now.
Right off the computer.
I mean, what are we, that's what I'm saying. Like, first of all, 50 grand, like, and then, like, I got other questions. Does this have to be in a checking account, readily available? Is this a savings account? Do IRAs count? Do retirement
home equity?
Home equity line of credit? What do we
do better to say you need to be able to authorize, like, 15 grand on card or something like that? Because the other thing is, like, why do I need to show you I had it in my bank account? The whole point is bottle service, which I'm sure it is, right? So it's like, say you need a pre-authorization of $10,000 on a credit card. To me, that makes more sense. To me.
First of all, again, we in New York, nigga. And sure, I can get a $30,000 pre-authorization on a card. It may not be my car. we're gonna burn this motherfucker down. You know what I'm saying?
But also, like, aren't you just setting niggas up to get robbed in the let out?
Nigga. Now you
Yes, you are.
Now you in the basement in Queens, hog tied. Niggas think you getting it.
Out of Richmond Hill.
Nigga got you in Far Rock.
You know niggas pretending to be beach, valet. Nigga.
Word.
Come on. What are we? The reality is that if you have $50,000, if you have access to cash and capital, then there is a circle that you go to, and there's a circle that you move in. Think of the Hamptons. Think of Martha's Vineyard. Think of any of those places. Those are not spaces in which someone is asking you, do you have cash on hand? Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Going to Garçons is going to be new money, or you're going to be a square with some money, and you can't get into like a Richie Akiva owned it.
It's going to be a bunch of niggas in there that's trying to sell Forex and crypto bros and all that other weird shit.
Coinbase.
God bless. There's no shots. Make your money how you make it. Get it how you live.
Oh,
but I would never in my fucking life give my bank account information to a nightclub. You niggas have lost your fucking minds.
Yeah. Well, I'm also just not trying to go to a nightclub with these kind of rules, because all the dudes are going to be assholes, or they're going to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I want to mention, have y'all any, I know, bro, you ain't watched, but have either one of y'all watched this, I guess it's a TikTok or Instagram, or probably both, of this guy named, the thing is called Alexis Bitar. Have you seen that?
She has the assistant, and they be outside of museums. Yes. Yeah, I've seen a couple
They won an award for like best Instagram or something.
Who gave that award?
What? They had some awards a couple weeks ago.
Like the Webbies?
Yeah, the Webbies, yeah, and they won it. So I don't know if he trans or something? Because kind of like a man. I don't know, but whatever. It's about this older, rich, Upper East Side woman and her assistant. And they have, then the clips are short. They're like 15 seconds, 30 seconds. But they're just telling the story about them and all the stuff they go through. And like, since the clips are so short, they could put out multiple ones without anybody getting tired of it or whatever, because they're really quick. But it's becoming a phenomenon. They're starting to get like celebrities on there and stuff. You should check it out. It's good. And again, they're quick and easy to watch. It doesn't take but a second. I want to tell
a little shout out real quick.
But
happy birthday. Happy 80th birthday, Patti LaBelle.
Oh, today. Yeah.
Yeah, she had a surprise party last night.
The party was popping. Looked like it was lit. Not so bad. Patti LaBelle.
I just want y'all to know I'm not going to be okay if I outlive this lady. Y'all going to have to come and check on me. I'm laid out.
I won't be able to check on you, because I will be at home cooking for my Patti who passed.
Patti taught me how to cook. I was, you know, early 20s. I lived in England. The food there is absolute garbage. So, you know, and I'm homesick. Can't just go home. I'm thousands of miles away. And Patti LaBelle had that show that I would download on like BitTorrents, where she would like cook with her friends. And one day in the PX, they had her cookbook. So like, I'm listening to the music. She had this great gospel album at the time. I think like Kanye and Snoop were on there. It was so soulful to sing along to. And I can't sing. But Patti LaBelle got me through that first year in England when I was like, what the fuck did I do? So
peace to Miss Patti.
Peace to Miss Patti. I hope she lives at least another 20 years.
Yeah. She looks great. I mean, you know,
she looks so good.
She looks amazing. She's, you know,
shout out to friends of the show, Bevy Smith. She was at the same summit I was. And she was like, but I have to leave tomorrow because it's Patti's birthday.
Yeah, she brought her brother to the thing last night.
She said, I went to Miss Diana Ross's 80th birthday, and I'm going to Miss Patti's 80th birthday. So shout out.
What a life.
And they both look great. Diana Ross was great, too, for 80. Let's mention Kelly Rowland. So Miss Kelly Rowland is I don't know if she's still there, but she was in Paris, in Cannes, actually, for the Cannes Film Festival, and had a kerfuffle with a security guard who was seemed to be, from the clip, seemed to be really rude and rushing her and not allowing the press gathered to take pictures of her. She looked amazing. She's got this blonde hair now. She looks unbelievable. And she just kept, the woman just kept blocking her way and trying to kind of guide, push her up the stairs.
And also, like, literally blocking the shots.
Blocking the shots, yeah. Which is insane. Like, what are you doing? So Kelly, the woman touched Kelly. Kelly said, don't touch me. And the woman said,
first she stepped on Kelly's train.
Okay, I missed. Okay, okay.
Kelly had a really long train, so she stepped on the train. And a couple times you saw Kelly turn around and smile, but you could tell it was like the mom.
Kind of like that church smile.
Out, like, but it's in public, so she smiled. Yeah. Like, did you not do that? Okay. You know, and then finally she snapped on the lady.
And the lady's just, you know, still pushing her up the stairs and, like, you know, not just being rude. And if you look at through some of the pictures of the festival, like Kelly said, I don't see any other women getting blocked or, you know, rushed up the stairs. It was in a weird way.
Though, it makes me wonder if she thought Kelly
wasn't who she was.
Talent or wasn't supposed to be there. And, like, was just a random on the carpet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the way she was treating her.
Exactly how she was treating her. And, I mean, French people are rude.
Very.
And to Kelly's point, because she talked about it, I think, today. Nobody else was being rushed like that.
Nope. And it was a white woman with Kelly. I don't know who she was. But even the white woman was like, yo, what the fuck is you doing? Like,
what probably her publicist.
Yeah, probably publicity or so. But Kelly looks amazing. I mean, she's always looked amazing. It's not new, but with this blonde hair and the looks that she's put on for the film.
Even before the blonde hair, she's become, I don't know when exactly Kelly decided that she was just going to full out just stunt.
Last them.
Like the past year. Yeah. I mean, it's like everything is fucking slay, like just slay. Like
whoever her stylist is murder.
Yeah.
And in a weird way, this, I don't know if it helped, but it definitely, you know, got people talking about her, you know, and raising her profile. I don't know what project she has coming. I don't know what movie she has at the festival. Hopefully it's a good one. But yeah, peace to Kelly. We love Kelly.
Well, I think her, I guess, acting star started to rise around that horrible movie she did with Netflix. So she had a good run of like three or four movies that
had the little Hallmark
movie, the Christmas.
Yeah, Three,
that was a three movie series, and then she did one other thing I can't remember right now, but then
it's a Halloween the movie, Culpa. Marlon Wayans on Netflix.
Yes,
yeah,
which I also did not watch, but her
they dropped it like not at Halloween. It was so confusing. It came out.
What?
We love you, Kelly.
Yeah.
You look amazing.
Go ahead, bro.
No. I got nothing to add. I mean, you said everything.
Say something. Okay. Abbott Elementary finale was Wednesday or yesterday, whenever it was.
Wait, let me tune Wednesday. Out. I'm behind.
Okay.
I'm not going to spoil it for you, but.
Yeah, we won't spoil it now.
But it's so good.
It's good. A lot of people might not have seen it yet. I mean, the weather's breaking, the people outside, so they'll probably get to it at some point. Okay. I won't spoil it, but it's really good. I'll say that it's very satisfying, and I'll leave.
Yeah, I feel like all of the characters, everything that their personalities have been building up to, kind of hit this crescendo at this episode, and it's perfect.
Yeah,
it's very, very, very good.
And I saw an interview with Quinta, not this new one, not the Hollywood Reporter one, but it was a couple months ago, and she was talking about, and I kind of realized it, but she made it more crystal how she's grown and elevated Janine's style, her clothes. Yes. You can see from she was very frumpy in the beginning, and she said the makeup people kept pushing her to do a middle part, and she was like, no, not yet. I'm gonna get there, but let Janine grow. Like first she changed her hair. Then she had a part on the side, and then it grew a little longer. And there's all these like subtle things about Janine's characters, specifically that have if you watch some of the early episodes to now, it's like a different person. you know, the dress.
Yeah, it's, she's doing character development correctly. Like, yeah, Janine, the character, got a raise when she went and worked at the district. So we're not getting storylines about, like, her bills getting cut off or, like, her needing Tariq to chip in on something. Like, she has a little more wiggle room to dress herself, to express herself a little more. And they're even Gregory, like, falling into what a teacher looks like and wearing, like, more sexy tops, like this sleeves are shorter. He's getting Henleys with like the second button open, like that's a big deal.
It's so
whereas like Barbara is wearing the same wig and the same jewelry because she's been doing this for 30 years. Like she's not going to change very much.
Yeah, she's probably 60 or so on the show. Like she's not going to do a mad flip all of a sudden. But yeah, again, like, no spoilers, but it was a great finale. Please watch.
Yeah. It's now, like a nod to like giving a character an actual arc. And I appreciate that.
Time to grow. Have you watched The Ultimatum of South Africa?
No, and I will not.
No, you have to. I promise. I promise you.
Is it just mess? Like, am I gonna be pissed off?
Oh my God. It is so messy. It is so
crazy. I don't know, because tweets from that country on my timeline make me not want to visit them in relationships at all.
Ever. I don't want to know. No, I don't want to watch nothing about them in relationships. I
promise you, this show.
I'm gonna give it a shot.
This show is bonkers. So I'm gonna say it's. I think it's number two or something on Netflix. It's like it's making some big ratings. Again, no, I won't spoil it, but I'm just gonna say this shit is okay. It's a good watch. It's a good watch.
So is Bridgerton season 3 part 1.
I've never watched
it. I enjoyed it.
That show is nasty. And that's like, what women are not telling you. It is like, borderline erotic.
But you know what? It's like Skinamax shit. Like back in the days, kids.
A little titty here and there, you know.
Yeah, it's like a lot of implied shit happening and heavy breathing and all that shit.
It's just for me.
Hold on, I'm going to ask you something.
Yes.
Denouncing.
Oh my God, these people.
So now again, I'm probably gonna get this wrong because I haven't dug in deep. But just so you
are,
as you always,
but go ahead.
You stop me before I got it wrong. But there are a couple of women who pledge. I don't with a Howard, which is the
So it's a couple of things. One, the most recent one is a young woman who pledged at Howard, which is Alpha Chapter.
Delta.
But it's becoming a trend. And actually, when it started, the first people I saw do it were men. I think the first person I ever saw was like somebody denouncing Alpha. Yeah. And Alpha Phi Alpha. But it would be like occasionally, but it has recently started to actually become a trend. And these people are both denouncing and renouncing. Renouncing meaning they're quote unquote kind of giving their letter and affiliation back, but denouncing meaning they're also condemning it, you know, as something untoward, unsavory, unethical, whatever have you. And they're all doing it supposedly in the name of their Christianity and their beliefs, right? The problem with that
Let me just stop you. This is what I don't understand. They didn't know they was Christians before they pledged.
but it's not about, that is a question. But the thing is, like, nothing that we do in our orgs, we are all organizations that are based in Christian principles. Our songs are based on hymns and spirituals. Our rituals, like, things are pulled from scripture. You know what I'm saying? Like, we have chaplains and we have, you know what I mean? Like, we most of our stuff happens in a church. So it's like, there are pastors, there are so many Black Greek pastors, you know? So the thing is not so much they didn't know they were Christian before, but it seems that it is tied to, like, a fundamentalist belief that anything that you devote too much time, energy, identity to is idolatry, right? That's the first part. The second part, because it depends, all of them be on different shit with it too. That's the other thing. There's not a consistent
reason for denouncing all different.
Yeah, there's not a consistent through line they be trying to say it's demonic or whatever. Yes, we have rituals and ceremonies and traditions, but it's not rituals like we make fucking sacrifices. You know what I'm saying? It's not like that. You know who also has rituals? The church. They like, you light candles. Sometimes in certain places you have incense. You take communion. You do things like that. Ritual helps with, like, it creates an air of sacrosanctity. And I think that's the other part. Like, these people are not smart. I'm just going to put it like that. They're not smart in their theology. They don't know their word, and or they've just had somebody feed them scripture with no context and without being encouraged to think for themselves.
Why wouldn't they just drop line instead of going away?
That's my fucking question. So, okay. I didn't mean to yell. That's my fucking question. Because the thing that is different about this one, what I was going to say is that all of them seem to be fundamentalist Christians, which means they take the word very literally, and church has to be the first, middle, last, everything that they do. Church has to be their all in all, right? And I say church and not Jesus because these are two different things, whether they know it or not. The thing that's different about this chick that just denounced is that she literally just crossed. She just crossed. She'd been a Delta for a month, if that. I don't even think she was a Delta for a full month, right? So to your point, Jeffrey, the criticism is, there is not, what changed in your purview,
yeah,
in your belief, because you have not been a Delta with the full rights and privileges therein long enough to go to maybe like more than one chapter meeting, right? So that's A. But I think what some people don't realize is that you don't just pay your money and you become a Delta. Like, she was online. Delta has Delta has a nationally mandated process. Like, a lot of people don't have that anymore. You cross in a weekend. Delta, you don't have to go underground to be online. You are on fucking line, right? So from the time she went to rush to get her application, to find out if, to do her interview, to find out if she made it, like basically all of 2020-24 has been her process, right? At minimum, all of 2020-24. She had so many opportunities to be like, you know what?
This ain't for me.
This ain't for me. And I read the letter. She wrote a letter to National to renounce and denounce, but she posted it on her Instagram. And I read the letter, and it looks like she went through our ritual and just like she was looking for something to be able to point to and say, this is a problem. Because she mentioned two things specifically. One was one of the things we say when we take our oath, right? The other, all of the organizations are affiliated with a Greek god because we are Greek letter organizations, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So for Delta is Minerva, goddess of wisdom, right? We do not worship her. We do not do things toward her. You know what I'm saying? It's nothing like that. But the girl mentioned Minerva being on our official crest. Have you never looked at a piece of Delta paraphernalia? Because she's always been on the crest. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's not something that you find out when you're online. She's always been on the crest. And I think what bothers people is that this girl pursued for 2 years, allegedly, right? You know, there are people, there are alpha legacies that didn't make line. One of my Neo's daughters didn't make that line. Like, who was one of, like, my Delta nieces. Also, it costs like $2,000 to pledge collegiate now. You didn't pay that money. Somebody wasted that fucking money. And there is a Delta somewhere who wrote your recommendation letter. We have to put our membership ID numbers on our recommendation letters for exactly shit like this, right? So like, there's another story.
Be like, who let you in, kind of thing.
Exactly. Like, who vouched for you, right? Mm-hmm. There's another source on who put her letters on you, right? And then you have totally fucked up the experience for the people who are online with you. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's her decision to make, but it impacts more than her, right? And so many people are like, my thing is, drop line. Drop that shit.
Her decision to make, but the way she did it is wrong. You said
is, people have been deciding, you know what, Greek life wasn't for me. I'm sure as long since the fucking founders first started this shit, right? For the 100+ years we all been around. You know what people do? they don't go to chapter meeting. They don't pay no dues. They don't wear their paraphernalia. They don't affiliate with Greek shit. They don't tell people they're
they just let it go.
They just don't. They just don't. It's just not a thing for them, right? There are so many Greeks for whom this is a thing. They just be like, whatever. I just don't talk about it because I don't affiliate with it. I don't identify with it. It's whatever. This shit is attention seeking. It's attention seeking. And you want some kind of feedback, external, something. Because I heard, and I don't know this for myself, so I got to check. But somebody told me that there is a damn conference that's being put together by people who renounce. And I was like, why the fuck you going to conference? You should have just stayed in your org. You still are trying to be part of something. You still are trying to identify with something. And that's the problem. You pledged for the wrong fucking reason. And you still got a hole. And instead of actually looking at yourself, you want to blame it on the org. And now there's some crazy bitch out here. And I don't mean to call her a bitch, but she crazy. She is crazy.
Turn up.
Denouncing Spelman College.
I saw that.
How did they not be a whole HBCU?
I completely enjoyed everyone denouncing other nonsense things on Twitter for the day. It made me very happy. I denounced McDonald's ice cream. It was a good time.
That's just crazy.
You can't denounce them student loans. Apparently she never graduated. And everybody's like, that's why you mad, because you ain't get your degree. But you can't denounce them loans, sis.
You ain't get to play in the reindeer games. You know?
Yeah. Are you guys pissed about her disclosing in the letter some of the things that happened?
I'm not. Some people are. I'm not. Let me tell you why. The secret shit ain't that secret. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, we've been doing the same. My great-grandmother, my grandma, they went through the same shit I went through. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the same ceremony. People know Soros die rituals at Goodwill. They're sold on eBay. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not. You can go buy a Delta ritual right now on eBay. It's there. I promise you it's there. Because people go to estate sales and they sell all this old Greek shit. Also, like, none of it is crazy. The fraternities are much more... The fraternities are much more, like, keeping their shit very close. Like, for example, Delta has a grip. I don't remember the grip. I've never had to do the grip. Because we don't do the grip unless it is a challenge to your membership.
Mm.
Right? So I've never done it. I kind of know it. I don't really remember. Because we don't
but
do
it. But you would know it if somebody else tried to fake it.
Yes. I would know if somebody tried. Because I know it enough that if somebody... I know parts of it. So if somebody tried to fake it to me, there's a very specific element to it that I remember.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody tried to fake it for me, I would be like, nah. But sorority sisters don't grip. We hug. You hug, you spit your information. And then, like, the way we might question shit is like, oh, do you know blah, blah, blah? Where is that? Who is this? It's such and such. Fraternity members, like, do a more direct.
They all got the grip. They all got the grip. All
right. But also, a lot of them, they won't grip you until. If they don't think you're good, they're not going to do it. They'd be like, nah, dog. Because it also is a sign of, like, I trust you as a brother. So we don't do that. So I say all that to say, we do have ritual and tradition, but, like, we have some ceremonies that are open, right? All of our ceremonies are multi-generational. It's old swords in there. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's nothing that's super nuts and crazy, but it is ceremonial to us because, again, the coming into this is supposed to be special, right? Mm-hmm. There is supposed to be an air of mystery around it. You are supposed to feel different afterwards, not because you just pledged your soul to, like, some other god, but because you just went through something that was very significant, right?
Yeah, like, there's an exclusivity to it. Like, exactly. Not a lot of people get this experience.
People forget the whole concept of rites of passage. Think about when we were growing up, almost any kind of special little, like, mentoring program, rites of passage program, like, there was some kind of little ceremony situation.
Like a song or something. Right.
Yeah, like you light a little candle, you do a little something. And that's what people are tripping off of. Like, yeah, we got a table set up with some shit on it. She's like, it's an altar. I'm like, it's a fucking folding table with a white tablecloth. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not Literally, we pulled it out of some church's back room and we put the tablecloth on it and we put, you know, like, it's not.
I think a lot of people, and maybe we can blame this on literacy or just people not going to actual church or the ARC Foundation, which I like to blame for everything that's wrong with Christianity, but people aren't learning about the Bible anymore. And something is happening with Christianity where we're just seeking out things that are quote unquote demonic versus just working on your relationship with Christ.
But that was my other thing, right? Like, none of this renouncing and denouncing actually brings people to Christ.
Right. So there's and a also, like, if you're saying, like, Delta's with their, you know, symbolizing the elephant, yada, yada, is idol worship, then, and Harry but Potter also, is also in that.
It's not a fucking official sorority symbol. But this is what I'm talking about. It's not a fucking official sorority symbol. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, it did it. We weren't founded with the elephant. And that's all I'm saying. Like, the girl who renounced Spellman, she's talking about rainbows are demonic. Rainbows in the Bible.
That's stupid.
Rainbows symbolize God's
promise. It's a part of nature.
She's talking about if you wear a white, because that's one of the reasons she renounced Spellman, talking about because they wear white for their ceremonies. Spellman got Christian stuff woven all up in everything. Yeah. You go to convocation, you go to the church, right? You're doing ceremonial stuff. She's talking about wearing white outside of weddings is demonic. Wearing white at a wedding isn't even Christian. Queen Victoria did it.
Everybody who go to the Frankie Beverly concert is a devil worshiper.
Like, to your point, Inca, people are taking stuff folks are preaching to them. They're not actually reading. They're not actually getting in scripture. They're not getting translations of scripture. They're definitely not reading entire books of the Bible because they have zero context, right? They don't know any history. And they're uncultured. They're literally uncultured. So they don't know about any kind of other norms and practices outside of whatever, like, their little limited church situation is. And I also blame all these conspiracy niggas who've been trying to call everything the Illuminati for the past 15 years. We're making people think that all these little things must be tied to some kind of
devil worship.
Worship, yeah.
Well, whatever.
And I also low-key blame, it's going to sound fucked up, but hear me out. The influx of Caribbean Americans,
Black
Caribbean Americans.
Let's turn off that.
Let's turn off that page. Hear me out.
Let's turn off that page.
Most of my live sisters are Caribbean, right? Every one of them, their parents thought they was on some devil worship shit. They take everything as demonic. I get it. But, you know, it'd be quick. They'd be like, it's the devil. That's the devil too. So I'm not dissing them. I'm just saying culturally.
All right. Well, I need to get my jerk chicken, so I got no comment. the Apple 100 best albums list. Hello?
I don't think it's worth acknowledging.
Okay. Oh, no, we got to acknowledge it. Because see, I've looked over the list. I'm talking about the whole 100, not the 10. It's actually a pretty good list. There are glaring missing things. Like, there's no Mariah Carey album. There's no Luther album, which is, I don't understand. But there are a lot of, it's actually a pretty good list. There's some really good records on there. What I do find is, I think that whoever was on this panel must have been young, because they have a lot of albums that came out like within the last maybe 5 years.
I don't even think they handpicked a panel. I think it was, like a public vote maybe, and that's the thing that I think that people, to your point, Jeff, don't ask. They blame the outlet who published the list instead of just asking, like, who voted on it? How did y'all rank the list? Because it's not always the people inside whatever.
No. I'm sure there are people inside the Ebro and Carl Cherry and them that had input, but it's not just them, you know, Zane Lowe, but definitely. But like, I see, like again, and I love this album actually. I see Travis Scott's Astroworld made it. It was really way down, like 97, 98. But I almost don't feel like, and again, I love that album. I don't know if it's that album and a couple other albums, like SZA's Control, I mean, Scissors SOS, excuse me. I don't know if those albums have been out long enough to let them breathe to be on the list. And again, I love the Scissors album as well. I just, and, you know, and then you got records like Usher down in Confessions at 95. You got My Life at 86, right? So, like, I'm not sure what the...
That was my challenge when we did the Rolling Stone Best R&B Songs of the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of the older people in the group who was doing the ranking. And I found myself, like, and I prefaced it by saying, like, this may be the old head in me, but I said the same thing you said. I was like, so many songs in this top 10 were influenced by songs you have lower in the ranking. Those songs need to be.
Yeah, exactly.
You know I'm saying? Like, you can't take the derivative of a song that's at number 40 and rank it higher
than
the original. Yeah.
So the top, I'm just going to run through the top 10. I'm going to mention the top 10 albums on this list. 10 was Lemonade. 9 is Nevermind by Nirvana. 8 is Amy Winehouse, Back to Black. 7 is Kendrick's Good Kid, Mad City. 6 is Songs in the Key of Life, Stevie. 5 is Blonde's Frank Ocean. 4 is Purple Rain. 3 is Abbey Road. 2 is Thriller. And 1 is Miss Education of Lauryn Hill. I vehemently disagree.
I disagree with all 10 of those.
I don't disagree with all 10. I mean, the Thriller.
Maybe Songs in the Key of Life. Songs in the Key of Life.
That should be in there. Abbey Road should be in there. Purple Rain should be in there, in my opinion. I wouldn't. Kendrick's album, again, to me, is a 5-mic album. I love that album. I don't know if it's
an
album of all time. I don't know about that.
Nor Blonde.
All time is crazy.
What's the call him? Nirvana. I actually like a couple other Beyonce albums better than Lemonade.
If we're doing music that changed the landscape of music, then it's self-titled and not Lemonade.
Yeah, exactly. The subtitle was my favorite until Cowboy Carter.
And see, that's the other.
But also, it literally changed the day that we dropped music because it was so.
It did, but it didn't. And the Beehive gets
we
mad.
We know your stance on that, but
it's not my stance. It's the truth. I even double checked it with somebody who's at Columbia with me. It was already in progress. Y'all. I'm not knocking B. I'm just saying it was a conversation. The thing was already happening. That's all I'm saying.
You know, Anti is way down. There's several albums that are just, I don't know.
It's too subjective a thing, right? Because here's the thing. What you think makes sense in that list depends on, like you said, Jeffrey, your age. So like, what are the, I only have to say your age. How much of this music do you know? That's the first. How much of it do you know? How much of it do you know well, right? And how much of it do you know enough about the context in which it came out and how it influenced the things that came after it, what it took from the things that came before it? And the reality is not enough people have those pieces. Otherwise, you're just gonna do the shit you like. There is no reason Frank Ocean's Blonde should be in the top 10 albums.
Again, another album I love. I love that album, but it's not a top 10
all
album.
All time?
It's all time.
It should not be of all time.
Where's Off the Wall? Where's Off the Wall? Where's In a Vision?
That's what I was about to say. You're putting it next, but even so, like you're putting Blonde in the same, like, couple of steps as Songs in the Key of Life. Are you on crack? Like, yes. It's great. Good Kid, Mad City, great album, really well sequenced. I went back and revisited it recently because I was listening to so much fucking Kendrick because I just couldn't put Not Like Us and Euphoria away, and I was like, let me actually. Which I want to talk about that. I'm gonna come back to that in a minute. Not the Kendrick part, but the journey that took me.
I'm gonna just say that I saw a number one on this list and immediately dismissed. Reading further, I was like, okay, but that's the other part, so as you should have.
Because us getting mad at these lists is kind of futile. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it's not going to change.
It's not our list. Right? And also, again, like I said, sometimes we're not being fair because we don't. It's kind of like how everybody complains about who did and didn't win the Oscar. Some or get nominated. Some of them are valid. Some of them are because you don't know the other material.
Mm-hmm. So you have to have what do you think, bro?
So the last list that I allowed to get me upset was when Rolling Stone said that there was 162 motherfuckers that sang better than Bobby Blue Blaze.
Than Bobby Blue Blaze.
And I realized at that point, the pivotal point in my life, that I realized that these niggas just was trying to get people going. Yeah, they just trying absolutely. To be provocative.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And I think that they're trying to add a little meat in the middle. So you're going to get you're going to get Anti and those sorts of albums, right? Because they're going to make sense. And then they know that everyone is going to go to that top 10, right? I say this with all due respect. To give that album the number one album of all time, and completely ignore all of the things, issues that came with that album's creation is fucking mind blowing. Mm-hmm. To pretend we are still publicly pretending that those people did not exist that created that album.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's like bugging me out. And Blonde, like, that's not even Frank Ocean's best album, right? It's really not, right? So, like, I get it. And like you said, I think people can be prisoners of the moment. And I think people can and maybe not necessarily have context or understanding of what an album meant at a particular time and how important they were. But these lists, They are what they are, man. Listen, again, all due respect, Frank Ocean being boxed between Stevie Wonder and fucking Prince is silly. I've reached the point in my life where for me to have conversations with people, there has to be a baseline understanding. There has to be a baseline foundation of agreement. And if you think that Frank Ocean's album belongs between Purple Rain and Thriller, then we're not having a conversation anymore. The conversation ends right at that moment because I recognize that this is going to be a futile conversation. And so insert the gift of, you know, Ray Charles. Yeah, okay. I mean, I guess, nigga, like, I'm not.
Yeah.
Okay.
We are moving forward. This is, you can say it's definitely get the people going, and Apple's gotten a lot of mileage out of this.
That's all they're doing.
Ebro and them talked about this pretty much every day on their podcast. Zane Lowe's been all over the TV. It worked. And they knew it was going to work.
While we're on music real quick, especially since I wasn't here last week, and I'm sure y'all were talking about, I haven't had the chance to talk about, and I'm not going to get into the whole thing, but I haven't had the chance to talk about Drake Kendrick. But I was driving home from New York last week before last, maybe. One of these 2 weeks. I was driving home from New York because I was bringing all my stuff back because it's the end of the semester. And so I had been listening to Not Like Us on repeat. Like, I literally listened to it damn near on repeat almost all the way to New York. And then coming back, I was listening to Euphoria, and I'm really like that, whatever. But then I was like, okay, that took me to Good Kid, Mad City.
Mm-hmm.
Took me to The Chronic, because I really hadn't listened to The Chronic top to bottom in a long time, which took me to which really is like such a wonderfully sequenced album. But anyway, it took me to The Chronic, which took me to Niggas for Life. Now, Niggas for Life used to be me and my friend's favorite album. It was my junior year of high school. We played that shit every day. We started on the B side. But I hadn't listened to it in a very long time. And I revisit most early 90s music relatively frequently, somewhat, or at least my favorite songs, if not the whole album. When I tell you I was horrified, I have never been mortified.
And Niggas for Life is brutal.
Awful. My God.
It's a great album, but what they're saying is crazy.
What's crazy, though, is that it sounds amazing. Like, it's like Dre's production on it, though, it sounds amazing. But I was like, I was rapping along and she swallowed it because it used to be my favorite joint. And I was like, oh, Ren needs to go to jail. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was really processing shit. And it wasn't that I didn't know the lyrics back then, because the lyrics were coming back to me. I just had not processed. I was like, I listened to it all the way through, but I still had to turn the shit off for a minute. Like, I went to Doggy Style as a palate cleanser, because even though it's also horrible language, it's such
it
a
ain't
fun
that. No, nah, it ain't that.
It's such a fun album. I had to go to Doggy. Like, after listening to Niggas for Life, Doggy Style felt like it was radio friendly. Like, the actual explicit version felt radio friendly. Nah. But then I went back to Straight Outta Compton, which was an easier listen. But go ahead, Sean.
No, I was just going to say, you heard that shit and you was like, well, maybe C. Dolores Tucker had a point.
You know what I'm saying?
Maybe she wasn't so crazy.
Like, I was like, oh, my parents ain't well, let's listen. Because I'm literally thinking to myself, because I skipped the grade, I'm like, I was fucking 15, 16 listening to this shit. Like, listening to the song, You Don't Have to Front on Me, Bitch, the automobile song. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, it really was terrible. But I think it was almost so ridiculous that I never took any of it seriously. Yeah,
but they did.
But they were clearly just saying the most outlandish. Was, shit.
Yeah, they did that on purpose. They were like, you know what? Yeah. We lost, you know, Cube left the group. Fuck him. And how can we make them? And they had the problem with the FBI. You know, they sent the letter and all that stuff.
Right.
So they were like, we're going to make the most outrageous record we could possibly make. And that's what they did. They made the most crazy record that they could think of, with the saying nigga the most times, the most curses, the most murders, like. Easy shot the prostitute in the car. Like,
yeah, like, I was like, yo, I forgot all about that, the sex worker skit. I forgot all about One Less. Some of the shit I had just
One Less, One Less is crazy.
One
Less is crazy, though, because from the production standpoint, listen to Eazy-E's ad-libs.
Yeah,
his ad libs on the things he's saying are so crazy, like in the background. You know what I mean? The lyrics are crazy too, but him in the back, kind of doing the ad libs for each verse, is bonkers.
But the wild thing is, if you are able to like tune the lyrics themselves out, and you're just listening to the album itself, it fucking sounds phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, the interludes and interstitials, like, all it is fucking phenomenal. It's seamless. Like, you could see the Chronic in Dre's eyesight.
Mm-hmm.
But god damn. But Always Into Something still holds up, thank God. But everything else, I was like,
you know what's interesting about that run of that and the DLC and the HLA, the first Easy album. When people do interviews with Dre, they always just start at the Chronic.
Right.
Like, he had a whole run previous to that with a bunch of dope stuff. Nobody, again, but it's a lot of young people talking to him. So, like, everybody just starts with the Chronic and then they go to Doggy Style and then, you know, on and on. Like, yo, but y'all never talk about, like, the DLC album. You know what I'm saying?
And the Doggy Style was more, like, and I'm going to get off this after this. I also went to Quick Is the Name, which I haven't listened to top to bottom. We don't talk about Quick enough. When I think about the fact that he was 19 and he did that album, I just wanted to say that. Because I hadn't listened to that in a very long time either. But I just wanted to just say publicly, I know my mama's going to hear this. Mama, I'm not going to apologize to you, because I knew, y'all used to let me rock, I knew not to play NWA or Cube in any way. Where
you can't play that anymore. No.
Or know that I owned it. That was the one album that they didn't want me to have in the house, was like, or the two, where I think like Straight Outta Compton and America's Most Wanted. But so I knew not to play it around the book. When I tell you, we literally listen to that shit every day. And I also was realizing, like, oh, this is why my mouth is so bad. Because, like, yes, I come from a cussing family. This is what we listen to. And we used to study it like a playbook to get the best, like, word combination, emphasis, impact, you know what I'm saying? Like, practice the delivery to make sure it hit just right, like, all of that.
Fun fact, America's Most Wanted, most of that album, Cube wrote for, it's supposed to be Eazy-E's second album.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
That was supposed to be Easy's second album, most of those records, but obviously, like, he left the group and then he just kept the records for us. So, like, so if you listen to Once Upon a Time in the Projects,
I was about to say, that's the one, that like, the Jack and Jill, Go Boys and Girls, They All Love Me, comes out. It makes sense.
That was Easy. Yeah, that was the Easy. I want to talk, bro, I want to mention Caitlin Clark real quick and Angel Reese. So, the WNBA is having a, I don't call it, not a resurgence, but just like their moment. Their moment is like, you know, building every week. There's a lot of interest. They're showing it all now on all the sports shows. They cover the games. They cover the scores. They're covering the players more like they should have been covered. And there's been a controversy where I've heard a couple do, like, I guess, of course, it was like Gilbert Arenas. And somebody else was saying they should actually let Caitlin score. They should almost, like, it was like, yo, let's let Caitlin go off. Let her do her thing, because that's good for the league. And the more she scores and the more points she gets and the more awards she wins, that helps the WNBA, which is ridiculous. And these women are not going to allow that because they're as competitive, if not more, than the men. But there's kind of like this controversy where people just kind of feel like Caitlin Clark is kind of been getting too much props. And what's interesting to me is, like, she barely does interviews. She don't talk. She hasn't said anything. She just plays ball. You know, she plays hard. Her team is not good. They haven't even won a game yet. So she's struggling. Her team is struggling. Go ahead.
It's annoying. It's almost like they don't think that these people are real professional athletes.
That's what it is.
It's like, just say you don't see women as people and we can just move on. Because why would I let a rookie come into my league
and score crazy? And,
I'm saying,
like, come on, let her be a rookie. Like, let her have those years, like, before Jordan started working out, mm-hmm. where the Pistons was beating up on him. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it's part of your development. Like, let her have an arc.
That's the thing. Like, let the coach develop the athlete.
Yeah.
And they should know better. Yeah.
But also, Gilbert Arenas has not been right about a lot. So, like, who we're listening to needs to fucking change, too. Like, I don't want to hear it.
Gilbert was mad at Rudy Gobert because he wanted to see his child born. Gil was like, yeah, dead ass. He was like, you missed a playoff game for that? He said, yo, man, that baby will be there. You can come back after the playoffs. He was like, yo, this is his first.
That baby will be there?
Swear to God. That's a cool. This is his first child with you know, and they had basically won that series by then anyway. Gil was mad. Like, man, you don't need to be there for no baby being born. Like, damn, bro. Yeah, what you think, bro?
Listen, I think Caitlin Clark is going to be fine. Obviously, she's a great player. Obviously, Angel Reese is a great player. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to see the WNBA, you know, getting the growth. Like, you know, watching them grow, you know, they got charters now. You're starting to see a lot more of the fashion looks in the mm-hmm. tunnels coming through. We're seeing them getting, you know, the Las Vegas Aces are under investigation for some sort of additional payment. So we're seeing, you know, things bubbling and things moving in a way that I think is dope. I think what happens is, it's like, anybody that suggests that they should just let Caitlin Clark go and do that, they just don't think that this is a real sport.
Mm-hmm.
And they think of it as TV. And if we just let the, you know, let the new white girl go in, which I find very interesting because, again, she doesn't talk. Like, I don't even know what she sounds like. I don't know.
Literally,
you know what I'm saying?
Never,
like,
heard her voice.
You would walk past, other than her just being tall for a woman, you would absolutely walk past her in the mall.
Yep.
If she worked in shipping and receiving in the Midwest, you would not blink twice.
Nope.
If she was in the loading dock.
If she was in the loading dock. She wore a baseball hat and you wouldn't even pay attention.
Right? So, you know, look, God bless. But, you know, Bomani made this point, and I think it's really, really great, and it's accurate, which is, you wanted the people to come, and here they are.
Yeah.
And this is what comes with the eyes and the ears and, you know, everybody being interested, is all of these fucking weird opinions. And so coupled that with, I mean, listen, NBA guys, guys who have, you know, literally, you know, dedicated their life to sport, have men that actually think that they could beat them at a sport that they are professionals at. Like, you understand what I'm saying? Like, I, the best basketball player that I've ever played against was not good enough to go to the NBA, right? You understand? You know what I'm saying? Like, what are we talking about?
It's a whole nother level.
Being a pro athlete, and particularly for the women, because there's no real gap. They don't have a break. It's like, literally 2 months ago, we were watching them in the Final Four. You know what I'm saying? So
the season comes very quick.
I'm happy for them. I'm happy for them. I wish great things for them. I want to see the league grow. I want to see the league grow on its own merit. We're starting to see, you know, the weirdo culture of, like, the reselling tickets and all of that sort of thing come into play. And hopefully it balances out and we can get, you know, folks can go see those games at very reasonable prices. Because it's actually fun and exciting and great to go see.
Mm-hmm. And that what's also interesting is I don't know, but I enjoy her a lot. Mel Mitch, she's a very funny girl on Instagram. She's
I love her. Damn you alone. Yeah,
she's dope. She's gotten into the WNBA, and she if you go to her Instagram, she talks about, and I hadn't really thought about this, but she talks about all the women that have dated each other in the league. And
it's like messy.
Broke up.
Messy. Who helps who up off the floor? And like, this one is walking this one through the tunnel. Like, it's messy. I'm enjoying it.
There's a kind of undertone of messy. And so it's kind of like, I don't know if they'll market it that way, but it's definitely something interesting to find out that so and so used to be married to such and such, but now they date so and so who's on the same team as their ex and, you know, all this other kind of crazy. I don't want to. Okay, I know. I'll just mention because I know now you had an idea for a separate show, but Puffy, Diddy, Brother Love, or whatever. Rizzle. Yeah, he's in bad shape right now. He's in really bad shape, and it's put a light on not only just him, because I don't make it just about him, but about the deviant behavior in the music business. And apparently, and I hadn't thought about this either, but there's like some investigations going on about kind of like a lot of sex trafficking and, you know, and obviously drug use in the music business through certain people. They're kind of moving girls, not girls that are like 9 or 10 years old, but like girls that are, you know, underage, 17, 16, 18.
Well, but what I also want to point out, sex trafficking, and I'm sorry to cut you off, Jeffrey, but I think it's important. When we do say sex trafficking, what people automatically think about is like girls getting kidnapped, girls, you know, by cartels.
Back of a truck or something like
that. Sex trafficking means anytime that you are moving people across state lines for the purpose of paid sex work.
Mm-hmm.
So well, it doesn't even have to be across state lines. It can just be from place to place. Federal sex trafficking is across state lines, but like here to my mom's house, it's still trafficking.
If you are moving somebody, even if I'm not mistaken, even within their will, like even if you could be a pimp and drive a prostitute to a John and you're sex trafficking, you know what I'm saying? So it's like that it because you are doing it for the purpose of generating business, making revenue, you know, getting paid, making money. Mm-hmm. And then it even escalates if there are drugs involved or coercion involved or anything like that. So I just want to be clear, because the thing with Puff that frustrates me is that we have so many clear allegations against Puff for just being generally despicable and violent towards people and towards subservient people and women, right? Mm-hmm. But people want so badly for there to be a child pedophile ring or a sex tape with Usher. You know what I'm saying? Like, they want so badly for there to be something that proves to them the rumors for the past 30 years that Puff is gay. Because that really is what it boils down to. People want something that proves that Puff's gay, right? And so no matter what we get in front of us that's real and tangible, people are cooking up, you know, this uglier, even darker and more nefarious and far-reaching idea of what things might be, which is why I just want to clarify sex trafficking in terms of like how Cassie called him out in her lawsuit is based on the fact that he was bringing in sex workers to have sex with her.
With her,
for him to watch, right? And that was under investigation. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Every day it feels like there's another woman. I know it feels like another woman has popped out with some allegations. And I mean, for intents and purposes, his career is over. You know, I don't know where he could.
Oh, that's over.
Yeah, it's over. Yeah.
His brand value is
done.
Already on decline.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why he was trying to do the whole Brother Love shit.
The Brother Love album.
And then, like, the Brother Love reband and giving people their publishing back and talking about, like, what the industry needed to do for black people and trying to start a black news network on the back of the revolt. He was doing a lot. He was trying to, like, make some moves, but none of this shit would curl all the way over. Like, he tried to get involved in the election conversation, if y'all don't remember last time, like, at the 11th hour. Like, after.
Yeah.
Talking about, I'm about to launch a black media network. And
whatever
name he chose, like, he got sued. Like, some crazy shit. Anyway, he's been trying to do this rebrand. And, like, it almost worked on the music side because he got the deal. The Love Movement, Love Album, whatever it was called, was nominated for several Grammys. But then the lawsuit happened right on the heels of
that. Oh, that shit got wiped out.
And Capitol very nicely gave him his album back. I was like, no, thank you. But there is no coming back from this because he was already like, even if this had happened at the height of Puff's Midas touchness, there would have been no coming back from this. But similar to Cosby, he's on the back end of his career, which makes it similar to Kel.
What makes it worse than anything though is the tape.
Yeah.
The tape, seeing it physically, like you know, hearing about something is horrific enough, but actually seeing this dude like grab
seeing the depravity of kicking someone much smaller than you who is not fighting you back while they're on the ground and in their head is something like you don't forget that and you don't come back from that.
No,
but also, I hate that people needed video evidence. And I feel that it's incredibly disheartening to like just imagine all the time and energy and other victims we could save if we just fucking believed women.
Right.
And
the first time.
Not always about a money grab.
Even when people say they don't believe, that's not this is my opinion. Let me be very clear. This is my opinion based on my 48 years of life, let's say 40 years in some kind of conversations that, because they start very early, or at least they did. We was listening to fucking Two Live Crew already by middle school. But like, when people say they don't believe, I actually don't believe that people really think they don't believe it. They think it's not that
big a deal.
Right. Yeah. Not that they don't believe it. They don't think it should be a problem. That's what they really mean. It's not that they don't believe that Puff fucked Cassie up. What they really want to say is,
why are you tripping? Funny. Yeah, why are you tripping?
What, okay, and what's they really want to be like, okay, it's not like they
but
don't
believe
not
women
that they
in
don't
that.
Believe that Bill Cosby slipped all these bitches drugs. It's like, okay, and you know what I'm saying? That's
right,
really
but believe right. women in that, like, this thing happened that destroyed me.
Right, but what I'm saying is they don't care, and they can't say they don't care. So instead, they say they don't believe. Because I fiercely do think that there are still a large number of people, men and women, who believe that whatever happens between a man and a woman, that's not anybody else's business. So if he smacked her up, fucked her up, threw her down the hallway, but to your point, once you see video, you become witness. You're part of it now.
Yeah.
So you have to have a visceral reaction to it. But when somebody's just talking to you about it, a large number of folks are still programmed to be like, that's not my business because I'm not in it.
That's not my business. And, well, what did she do?
Right. Or and what did she do?
To get him to go to that level.
Right. So I'll give you an example, right? If we had heard, and I think I said this on the show, but I said, like, if we had and this is an example of how people react to physical violence. If we had just heard that Will Smith slapped the shit out of Chris Rock somewhere after the awards, it's a blip. Black Twitter gets their jokes off. We keep it moving. Because people saw it, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Horror. Oh, the humanity. You know, unfortunately, as humans, we are programmed differently when we actually have to be confronted with the thing in our face. Otherwise, it is
Ray Rice. When you saw that on the elevator, you know, it's like, God damn, you know?
And even then, motherfuckers was like, what'd she do before they got
there? Absolutely. Oh, yes, it's her fault. Yeah. It's her fault. She would have just been chilling. If she hadn't been so drunk, if she hadn't blah, blah, blah.
She must have done that.
Knock her out. Yeah, yeah. So, you know. But, you know, it's a lot more to go with this situation. There's a lot more stuff that's going to come out. And, to her, I don't say credit. That's the wrong term. I can't think of the word I'm looking for. But I'm happy there was a tape because people got to see what she had been dealing with and not just like trying to get some money like Stevie J and all these niggas are saying, like, oh, she's just trying to get some money. It was bigger than that, you know? So, right.
I mean, people don't normally go that lengths with the lie,
mm-hmm.
right? Like we can start there. But the thing about that video was it was really jarring. Right. And I've seen violence in my life, right? Like up close and personal. And even seeing that was very, very jarring. One of the things I did want to point out was, there's an idea that everyone that has been around him has witnessed and been privy to.
Right.
That side of what we saw on that tape.
Right.
And if you really break down the tape, right, like there are no bodyguards around. There are no managers. There's no, you know what I'm saying? There's no accoutrement of a star.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's literally like this man and this man being like wildly unhinged and aggressive and violent to someone that is clearly not only is she not in a position to physically fight back, right? Like she couldn't, even if she was standing, she had no chance in that fight. And I think that there's something very cowardly about that. And I know that a lot of these stretches of issues that have occurred with him, particularly as it pertains to the allegations of violence and things of that nature, they all kind of come within a very specific window. Now, this isn't to say that obviously there wasn't things before, there wasn't things after, but there's a very specific window where it seems to be absolute fucking unhinged, uncontrollable behavior. And I hope that I hope that those kids are okay. I hope that Cassie is in a space where she is able to, you know, move on with her life as best she can, being a victim. Obviously, that is as horrifying as it was for us to watch, that seems to have been a pretty normal occurrence for her.
Yeah.
In terms of what the abuse was. And I hope that the people that saw that were impacted and affected and triggered, because it was fucking violent, bro.
Yeah.
Like
I chose not to watch it because I can't, I was like, I saw enough people talking about it. I think it dropped while I was at graduation. And it's kind of like how I never watched the video of George Floyd dying. Like, I just can't. I'm not. Mm.
It was rough. It was very, like, I had a physical reaction to it.
I didn't make it to the end of that video.
Yeah.
But what I also want to say here is that what the video did, and it should not require this,
Right.
But what the video does is it drives home that there was no exaggeration.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Because right. what we do is.
And
is,
even is, that she left out a bunch of shit.
I was yeah. about to say, it yeah. actually shows she was not as descriptive as that video mm-hmm. is showing us. And more than anything as well is that I think that it is important for, I think the authorities should be investigating that hotel. And the okay. reason I think that that the authorities it's should be investigating now.
It's not there anymore. It was, I think the Intercontinental, I forget what city, but it literally doesn't exist anymore.
No. The Intercontinental as but a, not as that a particular brand,
one, yeah.
100% exists.
For sure, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That policy had to go up a food chain.
Right.
You do not make the decision, or unless there has been a decision made from the higher ups, that hey, if these things happen, this is the protocol, this is yeah. the procedure, this is what we do. Nobody makes that decision. Nobody makes that decision without business affairs. You absolutely get on the phone and you absolutely call somebody. And this isn't even the kind of conversation that happens over email. This is a get your ass over here, right. get in the car and get over here on the ground right now type thing. And I think that you have to look at that because if you can see that and not feel the need to call the authorities or to go through proper protocol, which would be, you know, sending this to superiors, .. I just can't imagine what else is going on in a hotel that would make a woman so vulnerable.
Yeah, and you, can right. you can just pay them some money and it goes away.
And
they probably they would call it discretion, but that goes beyond any type of discretion.
That's way beyond discretion. We are not talking about a person philandering. We are not talking about a person, you know, running around with a hook in his dick out, right? Like, this is not right. what we talk about here. We are talking about a violent assault.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? A violent assault where a woman is clearly trying to get away.
Mm-hmm. Right.
She is clearly.
I'm sorry. Finish, Sean. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there's no resistance. There's no, like, she is clearly in trouble. Every single thing that you would be taught as a person in a security profession or like these are the things that you're looking for. Is in that footage.
Video. Yeah, in that video. Yeah.
I was going to say, I want to make a plea to people. And hear me out. I want to make a plea to people to stop using this to talk about whether Puff killed Kim Porter.
And oh, yeah. We need to investigate. Reopened.
Yeah, reopen the Kim Porter case. Here's the thing, y'all. First of all, I get it, right? Kim Porter dies at a young age, seemingly suddenly, under what, from the outside, are mysterious circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to be very easy to believe that maybe, you know, people have been bribed. Again, especially now, we're seeing that he tipped off like a major luxury hotel brand, hot evidence, but Cassie said he blew up Big Sean's car. I get it. The thing you guys have to remember about Kim.
Cuddy, not Big Sean.
Yeah, I thought that was Cuddy. Yeah.
Oh, Kid Cuddy. Sorry, not Big Sean, Kid Cuddy.
Allegedly.
Big Sean, like,
allegedly.
What do with this?
Allegedly, Kid Cuddy.
Allegedly. Yeah.
The thing to remember regarding Kim is that Kim has very close friends that she was not isolated from who are still around. She has family that she was not isolated from who are still around. Not motherfucking Al B. Shore. Not that nigga. No. Because she barely talked to Al until him and Quincy reconciled. And even then, it was just about Quincy.
It was kind of like, that's y'all, you know?
Yeah. And more than Kimora, right? Because, like, one thing about the publisher is that not for nothing, he's distracting from the level of horrific incidents and Russell's allegations. Just not for nothing. But and Russell was out of his mind. He probably doesn't even remember have the timeline been accused. And I think he said that.
Mentally was damn near a junkie.
Yeah. So like, but anyway, there are people who, and I'm saying this as someone who knows some of those people. There are people who, if they believed Puff had something to do with Kim's death, they would be acting on it, saying something about it, moving towards it, whatever. You re-traumatize those people.
Yeah,
right? Every time you bring this up, because they are on the net, they see this, as the girls probably do, right? They are on, and those girls also have people around them. I want to say that too.
The girls aren't kids. They're like, you know, they can meet. They're like, you know, teenagers about to go to college. They know what's going on.
And they also aren't sitting, they also aren't sitting helpless in the arms of their father. There are people around those girls. Kim's people. I just want to be clear that Kim's people are around those girls. So there's that. And then like, and I get it. Those are the good natured people who are doing it. Then there are people who mean more ill intent, who then tried to say Puff has something to do with Hev's death and Dre's death. And, you know,
like Jaguar Wright.
Literally like a Jaguar Wright. And it's like, again, these people's loved ones are here. They see this shit. Hev had a fucking embolism. He got off a plane. Why would Puff have anything to do with Hev? Why would Puff have anything to do with Dre? That shit destroyed him. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I'm just saying, think about, because I know it's celebrities, and in a sense, as much as we say we're doing these things out of concern, right? Like, I'm not going front. I've been talking straight about Kate Middleton, right? As much as we say we're doing things out of concern, in this case, again, there are people very close to this woman who are seeing this shit, right? These people aren't as far removed from regular world and the regular ass timeline as you seem to think. And it's also not helpful for the actual shit that is happening. Like, people move Cassie out of center immediately and go to Kim. You know what I mean? Like, immediately. Like, oh, that's fucked up for Cassie. Oh my God, Kim. You know? And I get it. I'm just saying,
leave it alone.
Yeah.
We're gonna wrap up on that note. I just want to say, like Inka just said, and I, we still ain't seen Kate, so I'm gonna let that ride.
They made a statement today that Kate probably will not be seen in public again until 2025.
She's dead, or in a fucking.
Maybe it's gonna take that long to get a proper
story together.
And that she's currently with her quote unquote birth family, which is really weird.
Okay.
Like, weird way to say that, because she's not adopted.
What? Exactly. Right. And but she's 40. meaning she's not on the royal
ground. She's with her parents. Yeah.
Yeah, but she's like a mother of what, two or three? Like, she's not a fucking baby. Like, she's wild.
Weird.
Yeah, so we're going to wrap it up on that note.
So we ain't never going to see Kate again.
Yeah, Kate.
Oh my God.
And Megan was right. Get the fuck out of there. Megan was right. But and if Megan hadn't got out of here, this would be reversed and Megan would be the one.
I don't think they did anything to Kate. I just think that the crown doesn't know how to handle this shit, like, at all.
I think they got rid of her.
I don't know. But I think
they got rid of Diana too.
Allegedly,
I think they might have got rid of
that. State visit to Nigeria and looked absolutely incredible the entire time. So
yeah, Megan, life. She's a
Megan chilling.
The views here are expressed are clearly those of Jeffrey Slash,
allegedly to this whole conversation. Yeah, we're gonna wrap it up on that note. We got one in before you for the holidays. Look at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
probably see you sometime. Yeah. Maybe sometime.
Memorial Day. I just I'm so tired. I haven't even registered that it's Memorial Day and it's almost June and it's wow.
Yeah, single hot dog. Please do not come over here looking for anything, friends.
Yeah, we
I ain't cooking. I ain't cooking a motherfucking thing.
I might fry some fish, but it's gonna be four fillets for the niggas that live here.
Well, Jason's friend went fishing, so he got some haddock or something in there.
Some porkies, some porkies for you, some perch. Yeah, yeah.
old niggas love
the porkies. I got some fish for you. I bring over there tomorrow. You got room?
As long as he don't expect me to clean it, not kill something.
I never liked porkies because it's way too many bones.
Way too many bones in that shit.
But so we'll see y'all sometime soon. Hopefully in June.
Happy summer, everybody.
Yeah, happy summer. Later.
All right.
Bye.